Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Always Dreaming Show. It is our salute to Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming. And there are some health connections to that. We'll talk about that after we get started. But before we do that, I'd like to thank our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and introduce my co-medical host from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And also from UK, the Interim Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure and recent collegiate graduate. Congratulations, Rick.
Thank you.
And tell them about the internet.
Well, there's a lot to say about the internet. How about if we go specifically to Health Matters on the internet? That would be go to wmky.org if you want to listen to Health Matters. There you can look us up in the menu, find a page devoted to Health Matters. You'll see a list of the more recent shows. Have a little summary there in case you're having trouble figuring out which show it is you want to hear. But the more recent shows are there. Click on the link, listen to the show. You can download the MP3 file. You can put it on your device and take it with you and listen to it wherever you are. All the audio is right there on the Moorhead State Public Radio website, wmky.org. After that, jump over to facebook.com/HMRadioShow. That's where you'll find our fan page. Yep, that's right. It's a fan page, and we're happy to have one. Absolutely leave some feedback. Let us know what you think. Suggest some show topics. You got a question? Tony's got an answer. You may not always like it, but Tony's got an answer.
Thanks for that.
And if it's technical, Tony will answer it too. No, I'm just kidding. No, we're happy to provide some interaction. There are things that come up on the show that are just intriguing and probably have, you know, more discussion around them than we put on the air. Sometimes Tony brings up topics with 30 seconds to go and just leaves you hanging, and you got to know how the cliffhanger ended. That's where you do it, is facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for this show, and I've got to talk some about the sponsor because
you always talk some about the sponsor, Tony.
In this case, it's a little different because Always Dreaming, we're actually talking
about... Did you watch the Derby?
Actually, no.
Have you lived in Kentucky your entire life?
In my defense, I was taking my mom out to dinner.
To take your mother out for dinner a week before Mother's Day.
Yeah, because all the places are full of Mother's Day.
So you're more important than your mother on Mother's Day.
This is the only chance I got. She lives on the other side of the state. I'm still proud of my actions.
Did you at least get her a mint julep or derby pie?
No, at her age, no.
Did you have a mint julep?
No, we both stayed sober. It really works out best that way.
They flashed a statistic up on the screen, and I heard somebody. I was actually at Churchill Downs on Wednesday, right, the day before the Saturday event. They had brought in one. Now think about this: 1,000 pounds, a half a ton of mint leaves.
And, of course, you're going to mix that with alcohol.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, they're obviously the garnish on all the mint juleps. But
right.
Put a mint leaf in your hand and think about that weighing 1,000 pounds. One glass of alcohol versus one mint leaf.
What do you think? 1%?
100. I think it'll be 100 times the weight by volume.
Okay. 100,000 pounds of alcohol.
Yeah, you're 50,000 tons.
Let me tell you, since you did it, let's divert ourselves from our sponsor for a minute, and let's talk about Always Dreaming. This was the second victory for Todd Pletcher, the trainer and rider John Velasquez. Pletcher is now, before this, he was a Health Matter-esque 1-for-45 in the Kentucky Derby. He is now 2-for-46, so he's well on his way to being a legend. $1,000,006, and also obviously that's nothing compared to the stud feeds for a Derby winner. But Always Dreaming was owned by the Brooklyn Boys Stable. That's Boys with a Z Stables. Vinny Viola, who owns the Florida Panthers in the National Hockey League, and Anthony Bonomo. And Bonomo he heads a medical malpractice insurance firm in New York. A big-time political donor plays in politics quite a bit. They watched the Kentucky Derby from, of course, the usual platform, Bamonte's Italian Restaurant. I think that's nice. Vinny's wife, her name is Mary Ellen. She says she's always dreaming about something, and so she thought she would name the horse Always Dreaming. And I think that's what really resonated with me, because I think all of us have dreams. If you ask, there's something that big that we all would like to accomplish. And for those of us in Kentucky, we have dreams about making this a healthier state. Nationally, we have dreams about affordable health care.
So on this show, we wanted to be syndicated at one point, didn't we?
Yeah, we wanted.
We had our dreams crushed.
About this show,
I mean, our dreams were absolutely crushed.
We were going to be like the Car Talk guys. We were going to get out.
We couldn't laugh loud enough.
True. There were a lot of reasons. Well, some of which had to do with talent.
Let's let everybody understand the real truth behind that. You and I could not come to terms on who was Click and who was Clack. I tell you, I still wanted to be Click. You didn't like being Clack, and you know it.
Well, Clack comes after Click. You would not say Clack, Click. Those dreams have died. There's still a possibility we could actually have a functional national healthcare system, and that's what we're going to do. Before we do that, though, the sponsor this time, the 10 economic rules that make money but don't improve health outcomes. This is from Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal's brand new book, An American Sickness, and she has 10 things that will make money for the healthcare system without really helping patients. And these are things, some of these things I think we'll recognize, maybe some of them we won't, but I wanted to give those. I'll give you the first five this time. Number one, she says, more treatment is always better. Default to the most expensive option. That is, if you have an option, do surgery, go with a newer. Ask your doctor about the expensive medicine, not the cheap medicine that's been working for decades. How about that expensive new medicine? Put a robot in the operating room. It's bound to be better than an operating room with two sentient human beings. It's much better to have a robot in the operating room. Use a laser. Rick, I know your wife Mary has had people come in. I want you to use a laser. You know, when in some cases, a scalpel works perfectly fine. It cuts mm-hmm. things.
Sure.
But a laser.
Well, the thing is a laser... It's funny, the laser itself isn't the thing. I think that's the steadiness of it, right? You want the steadiness, and I don't know. I just think it's funny. Yeah, yes, they do come in. And
yep.
The Da Vinci robot itself is like $1 million.
Yeah.
And it's not a laser.
Yeah, but it's a most expensive option for your surgery, so it must be better.
Do you know what the most appealing thing about the Da Vinci robot is? It doesn't talk back.
I'll check into that. It sounds like a great idea. We'll have a Da Vinci robot on the show. It'd be a welcome change, let me just tell you.
Well, let me rephrase it. It doesn't do anything you don't want it to.
Number two, a lifetime of treatment is better than a cure. I don't know. I mean, that obviously a cynic would say that, that people are trying to make money off of treatments more than cures. I haven't seen that in healthcare. I mean, we don't have many cures, but I don't think it's because we're not trying to get cures. There have been a few things. I know, for instance, ulcers. We used to treat them with acid-blocking medicines and antacids and milk of magnesia and things like that, and now we've found that they're due to an infection, and we give people antibiotics and cure the infection. So I'm not sure about that. Number three, amenities and marking matter more than good care. This is absolutely true. If you drive by the billboard for an emergency room, they never talk about how often they get the right diagnosis or what their cure rate is. They talk about how long it takes to be seen, as if that's the reason you go to an emergency room. You want to be seen quickly. What you want to be is taken care of, but you can't put numbers on that. It's much better to say the wait time is less than 10 minutes. Number four, as technologies age, price can rise, rather than fall. And we've seen that with something as simple as penicillin. Once it ages, there's nobody making it. There's one company that makes it. If that one company has some production problems or somebody buys out the company, all of a sudden the price skyrockets. So, yes, prices can rise rather than fall. And then number five, and this is, again, a cynical view of America's healthcare system, there is no free choice. Patients are stuck. That's absolutely true. And the final sentence, they're stuck buying American. Which is not true. A lot of people now are going either to Mexico or going overseas for their procedures. This seems to have very good outcomes and can be a fraction of the cost of healthcare here in the United States. So that's our sponsor, the top 10 economic rules that make money but don't improve health outcomes. And we see evidence of that almost daily, some of these rules, and we'll go over the second five in our next fractional portion. We start off with this, I believe, was from Health Affairs. The state of Iowa is likely to have no insurers selling on their insurance exchange for 2018.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this is a big problem. And you may remember that President Trump said these things might explode. Well, I don't know if this is an explosion, but it's a pretty bad event.
The fuse is lit.
Yeah, it is. Something has to change. And the interesting thing is the guy holding the match right now, in fact, is President Trump. The problem is, you may remember, most Americans get their insurance through their employer. But there are some people who have pre-existing conditions, people who are sick, people who are self-employed, people who can't get their insurance through their employer because it's a small business or something like that. They can buy it on a state exchange. And in Iowa, there are about 51,000 and change people on their state exchange. Aetna, Wellmark, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield have pulled out of Iowa. There were two insurers left, one small insurer called Medica, and it looks like they're going to pull out. And then there was another insurer called Gunderson Health Plan, but that's only in four counties. So if Medica does indeed pull out, and they're threatening to do so, the majority of the state of Iowa will have no exchange insurance options. That is, no insurance options for people mostly with pre-existing conditions. Aetna, when they pulled out, said there was financial risk and marketplace uncertainty. And again, that marketplace uncertainty is all about the fact that no one knows whether the Affordable Care Act will continue or not continue. Health insurers have threatened to quit offering policies on the marketplace in general if they don't get regulatory details they need to design and price their insurance plans. And quite simply, if you don't know what the federal government is going to do, whether they're going to support insurance or not, then you can't design a profitable insurance market for that state, and they do have to make a profit. And there are several states in this position. Tennessee was for a while. It looks like Anthem Blue Cross is actually going to come back into most of Tennessee, and so there will be some insurance plans available on the marketplace for Tennessee. But Iowa looks like they're pretty well stuck. They're in big trouble, and I don't think they will be able to I don't think they'll be able to offer insurance plans in 2018. 2017 may be the last year that they can do it, unless there is some legislative change or some administrative support for the Affordable Care Act. At that point, it will be meaningless whether or not you have the Affordable Care Act, because if you don't have insurance, then affordable insurance is not even an option. We're going to talk more about the state of Iowa.
Are we really?
Yes, we have to. Yeah, because you're going to like this. Second fractional portion.
Aren't you kind of putting words in my mouth?
Yeah, I am. If you were a robot, it would be perfectly fine, but it appears...
But I'm not.
I know, and that's where our problems start. Our break also starts in a minute. Why don't you take a break as well? Come back and listen to our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Always Dreaming Show, our salute to Kentucky Derby winner, Always Dreaming.
That's why I was tired.
Because
it's
you have
the
to
title
sleep.
Of the show.
Yeah.
Well, I started my dreaming early.
No, I was thinking you're referring to our listeners who are probably dreaming right now because they're deep into the show.
Which is just a sad that it wasn't always daydreaming.
Our sponsor for the second time, the 10 economic rules that make money but do not improve health outcomes. I'll remind you of the first five. Number one, more treatment is always better. Default to the most expensive option. We've certainly seen that. Lifetime of treatment is better than a cure is number two. Number three, amenities and marketing matter more than good care. You see this over and over again. If you look at the commercials are all about being your friend and people walking and scuffing the leaves in the fall and things like that. Nobody is actually there working hard to try to make sure that the diagnosis is right and you get your treatment on time. Number four, as technologies age, the price can rise rather than fall. We've seen that with a number of generic medications. Number five, no free choice. You are stuck. You can't legally import medicines from other countries. You can't go to other countries for your surgery. So you are stuck, and you are stuck buying American. Number six, more competitors vying for business does not mean better prices. It drives prices up and not down. We've seen that when there have been several healthcare entities in one city or one marketplace. They do not try to get the cheapest. It's very confusing, and they're able to convince you that their place is better, even though it may not be cheaper. I absolutely agree with that. Number seven, economies of scale don't translate into lower prices. That is, if you look at the bigger players in the healthcare, the multi-hospital healthcare systems, the large pharmaceutical giants, and so forth, if you get big, rather than becoming efficient, you just demand more money. And so prices again go up. Number eight, there is no such thing as a fixed price for a procedure or test, and the uninsured pay the highest prices of all. Well, that's a little bit dated. Insurance companies negotiate a discount. So if I do something for $500, the insurance companies negotiate a 50% discount, and they pay $250. If I lower my prices, they still have their 50% discount, and so I get paid even less. So I will flash a high price at the insurance companies or at Medicare, and I will get paid a fraction of that cost. Now, the thing is, if you're not a insurance company or Medicare and you pay the full price, then you, in fact, would pay the most of all. Most hospitals, most clinics now have some discount program for the uninsured, but the prices are scary. I had a patient came to the free clinic, and he needed to get a CAT scan, and we were looking at almost $3,000 for a CAT scan for a guy that didn't have any insurance, didn't have any money. He negotiated down to $1,500, but he's going to take the rest of the year to pay that off. Meanwhile, I can't get him on the medicines he needs because he's busy paying off his CAT scan. These are, you know, at the lower income level, these are the kind of decisions patients have to make. Do you want to get the test? Do you want to pay for the treatment? I can't give the treatment till I know the test results. Mm-hmm. Just sad. There are no standards for billing. There's money to be made in billing anything and everything. There was, at one time, when we were talking about, theoretically, the Affordable Care Act, an idea that there would be one uniform bill that everyone could understand. And that idea is not good business, even though it would be very good for patients. Mm-hmm. And so it never came about. And number 10, once again, absolutely true, prices will rise to whatever the market will bear. You or your loved one, with your life on the line, how much are you willing to pay? That's how much we charge. And it's unfortunate. Those are the, according to Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal, An American Sickness, those are the 10 economic rules that make money but don't take care of patients. And we felt they were worth repeating. We'll do them all in our third and final fractional portion. Now, you may remember, Rick, when we left last time, I told you that there is a special circumstance why I believe that Iowa and its 51,000 people that can buy their insurance on the exchange, many of whom have a pre-existing condition. They may also be young people, single business owners, things like that, small business owners. I think there's a reason why they won't get insurance. This is from David Anderson. He's a research associate at Duke University, former health insurance official. He discussed Iowa's exchange market in a post on his healthcare blog called Balloon Juice. That's great. The name of the blog, Balloon Juice. You can look it up.
And you're trying to keep me from daydreaming.
Yeah. There is one patient, whose care costs $1 million a month.
Nice.
This guy he has a rare genetic disease, and it's very severe. He is obviously not getting insurance through his employer. He goes on the exchange with the other 51,000 people, and if he picks your insurance company, you are bankrupt. Because he is going to cost $1 million a month on his care. If the insurance companies raise their rates high enough to actually cover $1 million a month in health care, nobody else can afford it because, I mean, none of us can afford.
Right.
And especially you divide.
Classic catch 22.
Yeah, $1 million a month, even if you divide it among 51,000 people, even if the other people didn't do anything, that's going to do it. And this is the problem with insurance. According to the Affordable Care Act, we were all supposed to share the cost of our health care.
$1 million a month isn't affordable.
No.
So if you had a big enough pool, if everybody in the United States chipped in, we could pay that bill. But if you just look at the marketplace, people
in Iowa. Well, if there's one in every state, then you have.
And
Iowa, arguably, is a really low population state. So, I mean, arguably, if you did it per capita, how many of these people exist?
Right.
It's probably going to be California's going to have seven of them.
Now, the Republican option was to create high-risk pools and just pull those people out of the insurance market and let the taxpayers subsidize it in some way or another. The details of the high-risk pool I've not seen, but that was the idea. The Affordable Care Act was to try to encourage young people to sign up in large numbers so that we could spread the cost out among the young people. The problem is it's these type of things that make the insurance plans so high that we kept the young people from purchasing them because they had to subsidize the care of the older and the sicker people. So this is an extreme example, but it's a nice way to point out why insurance is difficult. Now, one of the other things is, you know, with other things, if you don't build your house in a floodplain, there could be an earthquake. Your house could get struck by lightning, but there are numbers behind that. In this case, you yourself may wind up being the $1 million a month guy. You know, something happens to you, and you could.
No, it's a tough question. I mean, it's just mired down in ethics and morals and money. And I mean, this is a difficult question for a society that feels in general it should take care of itself. Right?
Yeah. Now, and the other thing is I might want to take care of that guy. But if I find out that, again, according to our 10 economic rules, somebody is gouging the rest of us to provide that person with whatever care that person needs, that's going to really irritate me.
Exactly.
That I'm paying $1 million a month. I'm not paying it to this person. Well, I'm paying it to some drug company.
And if it's going to a drug company where the CEO is, you know, pulling down a cool $28 million in bonuses every year, that's going to make it even more difficult to accept and defend. You know, again, you know, here's where you think, you know, maybe some company that's worth $600 billion, you know, a.k.a., you know, Google, Apple, you know, how about, you know, you guys help us with this? I mean, the people that are, you know, completely flush with I mean, they have so much cash that this wouldn't really even be, it would be a small tax on them. And that's not the right answer either. It's just degrees of reasonable, right?
Yeah.
And so you hate to say, okay, just because you have it, you should do it. But, I mean, you can't ask, especially, let's take it, Iowa, small state, small tax base. Probably not a lot of, per capita, not a lot of, you know, the high income jobs, right? So most of the jobs are probably middle income jobs. That's going to be difficult to raise the kind of tax base. And I say tax base, but what I really mean is, you know, an insurance pool. You know, it's going to be hard to raise the insurance pool to the point of handling this particular person.
Yeah. And that's the problem. And the other problem is that the Trump administration so far has not committed itself to stabilizing the Affordable Care Act plans, the Obamacare plans. They've not said that. In fact, they want to repeal those. The replacement, we're not sure what's going to happen to the people there. So the insurance companies right now are in limbo.
But I do think that, Tony, we are probably highlighting $1 million a month patient. That's probably pretty. This is a pretty rare case. I think the one that we should be more worried about is the Hep C, right? So $84,000 to cure Hep C, which per capita is going to be a lot more places and could very well equal $1 million a month in Hep C, diagnosis,
yeah,
and treatment.
Collectively,
you put all the Hep C together, they're easily going to exceed that amount.
But before we go on, and that's actually the next thing you're going to have to do to have some type of health care plan that is affordable for all Americans. And before we go on, Washington Post, and back in April 3, pointed out that half of Americans only use 3% of health care costs. So there are half of Americans that barely even scratch the surface of health care. Meanwhile, the top 1% of spenders uses more resource than the bottom 75%. So again, there have to be a lot of people paying in to be able to subsidize the care of that top 1%. You can say, well, we need to get fraud and abuse out. That's true. That 1% changes. It's not like there is a person or a group of people that year after year are top 1%.
Right.
Unfortunately, a lot of people, as they go through life, and especially as they get close to the end of their life, they may slip up temporarily into the 1%. So we may all be 1%ers at some point, but a lot of us never will really use that much resources, and yet we find ourselves with no discount for safe driving as far as health insurance.
Well, I think, Tony, we talk about this all the time as well. we're doing everything in our power, and I say collectively, the human race, to extend lifespans, and we've eliminated a whole lot of needless cancer deaths that would have never let you get to that 1%, right? You would have died long before you ever got anywhere near that 1%. So we're actually giving people a better odds of actually getting to that 1% problem.
Yeah.
Did it look at diagnoses?
There are, as you know, Shelley, there's some diagnoses that the treatments are just so expensive. Those type of diagnoses, a lot of them are cancer. And although there are some things that you can do to lower your risk of cancer, some types of cancer just seem almost to occur randomly. So you could easily find yourself in that leukemia, lymphoma type of cancer that's terrifically expensive. And the risk factors are not clear. It's not a matter of just simply leading a good life and protecting your health.
Right, so we're back to prevention and screening.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
So, and what's the answer? What do you do?
I don't know. And interesting, I see, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe, you know, gosh knows, that happens once a week, month, year, millennium here. I mean, this looks so much like the pension problems that we had years ago, where you had a large group of people working, paying for a small group of retired people. And so companies had pension plans, states had pension plans, governments had pension plans. You know, now that you see these companies, they get to the point where there's so many people that are outliving their pension funds that now there's not enough people working to pay for the pension funds, and thus causes bankruptcies and all kinds of problems. But it seems to be a similar or an eerie parallel.
Yeah, more people are getting older and living longer, as you said, and that produces not only strains on pensions but also strains on healthcare dollars.
Right.
Now, second problem. So let's assume we solve that in some way.
But neither of them can be solved quickly.
No, it's good, and I would like to see a plan that at least attempts it. I haven't really seen that again from either party, and I feel like there's got to be a bipartisan effort here because this is not going to come.
I think you should run
party.
For president.
Yeah, sure. Next up, this is May 4th.
That's how you get him to move on.
Yeah, no, but the second problem we've got again is the pharmaceutical
industry. We only
have
two.
Yeah, well, no, the second of many. Prescription drug spending has increased 10% annually for Blue Cross and Blue Shield members since 2010. 10% a year since 2010. Overall rise of 73%. That was published on May 4th. And if you look specifically at patented drugs, their prices are going up 18% every year since 2010. The generic drug prices are flat. And then if you go further and you look at the patented drugs that don't have any competition, they're rising at an average annual rate of 25% per year. And that makes up 63% of spending, 10% of the drugs used.
What other product could get away with that?
Yeah.
Certainly not milk. Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, they can just kind of get away with it. The thing I see about the generic, the percentage sounds so high, but the generics, by the very nature, are incredibly, you know, they're considerably cheaper, right? So 25% on a 35-cent pill is not near the same number, although across the system it's still 25% is still 25%.
Spending on the drug Gilenya, used to treat multiple sclerosis, increased 30,257% over a seven-year period. Drugs like Enbrel, Gilenya, Harvoni, and Humira, these are the things that they advertise on the evening news. These are costing billions, and the prices keep going up. And it's not because they're expensive to make. Pharmaceutical companies protect their patents viciously. They're excellent litigators. While generics are supposed to be introduced, they can use the court system to keep the generics off the market for years. Hospital administrators said about 34% the impact of these drug prices had severely impacted their budgets. The pharmaceutical industry spent more than $24 billion to market directly to physicians in 2012, $3 billion to consumers that year. So you get an idea.
It is obscene, the amount of marketing.
Yeah.
And you know, the shame of it is the majority, maybe it's just what I watch on TV, but the majority of the marketing involves bathtubs.
There are some, there's some legislation targeting these unconscionable increase. The Fast Generics Act targeted at anti-competitive behavior that stifles generic drug development. Again, paying people not to develop a generic, taking them to court to delay the generic. There's a bill that's supposed to target that. Drug makers would have to justify price hikes of 10% or more in a bipartisan bill called the Fair Drug Pricing Act. There was also a Preserve Access to Affordable Generics Act, which would ban brand name manufacturers from using pay-for-delay agreements to keep generics off the market. According to my sources, the likelihood that Congress will pass these bills is small. If you think the advertising budgets are large, the pharmaceutical industry lobbying budget is obscenely larger than that. So I suspect then we're going to continue to have this double-digit inflation in pharmaceuticals, which are now 22% of our total health care dollars, and rising obviously at a rate of somewhere north of 10% per year. According to Reuters, spending on prescription medications in the U.S. Could reach $600 billion by 2021. And that's out of a little bit over a trillion currently, a little bit over $1 trillion health care bill. Half of it by 2021 is going to be for these drugs. And then finally, this piece of out of the Washington Post, May 4th. Despite widespread outrage over soaring drug prices, people on the average are actually paying less for their medications than they did a few years ago. And they talk about generics, but the real thing here, Rick, is the drug companies don't want you to pay out of pocket for your drugs.
Right.
Because at that point, you're going to squawk and you're going to walk away. On the other hand, if they can get into our collective insurance so that we all pay for the drugs, at that point, that's where the big money is.
So you know where that also, it's a similar analogy, is car crashes. Right, when you get your car fixed, the body shops really like to have you on the insurance. It is, it's yeah. True. They because when people are paying for it out of their own pocket, they don't fix every little scratch and dent. But when the insurance company's doing it, they replace quarter panels, entire quarter panels.
1/3 of Medicare patients who are expected to use Gleevec, a life-saving leukemia medication costing up to $146,000 a year, failed to fill prescriptions within 6 months of diagnosis. They went off a life-saving medicine, presumably because of cost. If you have a copayment more than $50 a month, you're 70% more likely to stop taking these expensive medicines. 24% of all cancer patients chose not to fill a prescription because of cost. So not only is this impacting us financially, but it also, it's affecting care. You diagnose properly, you treat appropriately, and yet the patient doesn't get well because the patient can't afford to get well. This is not that surprising, unfortunately, how care is hampered constantly by cost. We are hampered by time. We're going to have to take a break and come back with our third and final fractional portion. Once again, you're listening to Health Matters on...
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Always Dreaming Show. Our salute to Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming.
It was such a nice break.
And the Brooklyn Boys stable that owned the horse and watched from an Italian restaurant in New York.
You did watch it.
No, I saw the replays, but again, I was eating dinner with my mom.
You couldn't take 2 minutes out of your busy day.
I was paying attention to my mom. You don't walk out on your mom.
But your mom was probably, they probably had it on in a TV right there in the restaurant.
I was engrossed in conversation with my mother.
Your mother didn't want to watch the Derby?
No, my mother doesn't care about Kentucky Derby at all.
Your mother's from Kentucky, right?
Yeah, but we're not all horse people.
And you're from Western Kentucky, which is over that way.
That is a common myth that everyone in Kentucky likes horses and bourbon.
A stereotype.
That's right. I am insulted.
Well, I knew you don't like bourbon.
I know.
But you've got a horse.
You know, if I were bigger, I would throw you out of the studio.
You actually own a horse.
I have a large dog. It's a saddlebred. That horse has not been ridden in several years. It eats grass, and we throw apples at it, and we've reached.
No, you don't throw them at it. You throw it to it.
Well, if the horse catches an apple, he's pretty happy, but that's about it.
But do you drive a Corvette?
No. There you go. I'm barely a Kentuckian.
He's also wearing orange.
Now there's something I will not do. I do have my limits.
Is that because of Kentucky, or is that because you went to Vanderbilt?
There's a whole bunch of reasons. I will tell you, I will not move If an academic position opened up at an orange school, I would not go there.
What would they have to pay you to go there?
Everybody
has a price.
Absolutely not. I will cling to my morals as long as I can. I will not go to an orange school.
You realize they listen to us down there.
Oh, sure, but they're going to have to deal with their own problems.
Now, here's the thing. We're going to have the grapefruit people after me. Everything orange is coming after you.
It's coming after me. And I don't know. Politically, we're trading on thin ice right now as well. 10 economic rules that make money but do not improve health outcomes. Elizabeth Rosenthal, brand new book, An American Sickness, talking about the problems we have in trying to get our costs under control, which we have to do before we will have a functional, sustainable healthcare system. Number one, more treatment's always better. The most expensive option is the way to go. Number two, a lifetime of treatment is better than a cure. I haven't seen that in my practice, but I assume she has an example of that. Three, amenities and marketing matter more than good care. If you've ever watched advertising on TV for insurance plans, for home care, for hospitals, that's absolutely true. Number four, as technologies age, the price goes up rather than down. Five, there is no free choice. You are stuck buying American. And again, we saw this when the drug prices went up and people tried to buy overseas. You could buy a lot of things overseas, but prescription drugs were not one of them. Six, more competitors does not mean better prices. In fact, in most cases, they concentrate on those amenities and prices go up. Seven, economies of scale don't make lower prices. The bigger a healthcare system is, the more they can demand for their services. Number eight, no such thing as a fixed price for a procedure or test. Price transparency, in my opinion, will not work because the prices are simply numbers that you throw at insurance companies to try to counteract their discounts. And hospitals do this. The price that you see on the door is the one they use to negotiate the real price with some very steep discounts the insurance companies demand. Number nine, no standards for billing. Again, there is money to be made in keeping you confused about your hospital bill. If you understand your hospital bill, you learn how to use the system to your advantage, and the healthcare system does not want that. And number 10, prices will rise to whatever the market will bear. And we have seen that with people putting a fire hose basically down into the trough of the Affordable Care Act and draining money out as rapidly as possible. And I think any universal system that has that much money, unfortunately, there will be people who find a way to drain it. That's our sponsor, the 10 economic rules that make money but don't improve healthcare. Now, we were talking last time, again, to keep this theme going, we talked about the things that will have to happen before we develop an affordable, sustainable healthcare system. Number one, we're going to have to figure out what to do with high-end users because you cannot apparently spread their risk out successfully, or at least Iowa couldn't. Number two, the pharmaceutical industry has found a way to tap directly into the health insurance rather than some separate account set aside for pharmaceuticals. Their prices are rising at alarming rates, and they are becoming very rapidly the leading source of healthcare expenditures. Next up, and this is a little bit of an aside from the other things. We're talking about things that must be fixed. Here's something that probably won't be fixed anytime soon, and that is a high deductible healthcare plan. The idea is if we make you pay more personal money for your healthcare, then you will have to make decisions. You will hold the healthcare providers accountable. It doesn't work very well, but we haven't found anyone else who can do it, so we're going to make you do it. According to Becker's Hospital Review on May 19th, that's May 19th of last year, but these figures are appropriate to our current situation. Almost 90% of marketplace enrollees are in a plan with a high deductible. The out-of-pocket cost for those per patient rose 230% between 2006 and 2015. So if you feel like it's hard to afford your health care, you're absolutely right. Again, we're looking at double-digit increases in your pharmaceutical fees, also 230% rise in 10 years, essentially, in your insurance out-of-pocket health care costs. Deductibles increased 67% in the past 5 years. Workers' wages went up 1.9%. Out-of-pocket medical expenses jumped 9%. The rate of bad debt for hospitals is increasing because people with insurance are defaulting on their health care because they can't afford these out-of-pocket expenses. 44% of millennials chose low-cost plans with high deductibles. So, in fact, this is the preferred plan for young people with not much illness. Unfortunately, it's also becoming a reality for people who have chronic illness. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 43% of insured patients said they delayed or skipped physician-recommended tests or treatment because of high prices. I think that's the way it's supposed to work. I mean, that's not maybe not a good thing, but I think that's the idea of the deductibles, is you have to decide whether it's worth it to you. Mm-hmm. And then a study from the National Bureau of Economic Research indicated employers that offered high deductible plans reduced their health care costs. So this works at reducing an employer's health care costs by shifting those costs onto the employees. And most people feel the prevalence of high deductible plans will increase. So unfortunately, in our desperate attempt to rein in costs, we're going to make you pay out of pocket for your health care, because it's really the only tool we have to try to keep these costs reasonable. Unfortunately, you can't out-of-pocket negotiate with pharmaceuticals. You can't out-of-pocket account for other people who are spending a lot of your health care insurance dollars, but at least keeps you from going to high-end before. And, you know, this is a new thing. Shelley and Rick, you may probably about 10 years ago, the common sense was that those deductibles didn't matter, that people would not behave differently if the deductibles were high, because they had to have their health care, and there was nothing they could do. With the inflation and the cost of pharmaceuticals and tests, or maybe we've just miscalculated on that, I think most people now agree that high deductibles do overall tamp down demand for healthcare services.
When you raise your deductible on other things like homeowners, cars, you're basically assuming a larger risk, right? And so you'll be less inclined to engage that process unless it's really going to be relevant, right? So, because you don't want to raise your rates. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you can see how the whole cycle works.
Yeah, it's the same, but it's different, because your health insurance rate, unfortunately, is not based on what you did. Whether you had a wreck or whether you burned your kitchen up or something like that, it's based on what everybody around you is doing. So you can be very efficient. You can conserve your healthcare dollars, but somebody else is spending them. You're going to be.
But I think there's an assumption there that your pool of people in the boat with you are also doing their part. And I think that's where the misconception comes in. I think we as a society want to believe that that happens, but it just doesn't. Right? You have chronic visitors, you have, you know, frequent flyers, I think they call them, in the hospitals, and you know, you've got you know, all kinds of reasons, plus you've got people who just have high dollar resolution, right?
I mean, yeah, you know, and stepping back for a minute, I think we all have the thing that we think ought to change. I am not convinced that our high-tech healthcare system is doing well by us. You know, Shelley and I do house calls. Mm-hmm. You see people that are on over a dozen medications, you get a chance to see how those people live, and you feel like you could help them out a whole lot
sure.
A lot less expenditures in medications.
But I mean, Shelley talked about it earlier. I mean, you know, it's education. It's wellness. It's actually starting at an early age and doing things that don't cost money early on, but changing the way you behave and consume food, where you partake in exercise. It's all of that, and Tony, those are the things that give you the longevity, right? The high tech, to me, in my opinion, is what we do to solve acute problems, right? So they help us with the surgeries, they help us with the weird diagnosis. I mean, the high tech shows us the anomalies, the weird things, right? But the basic live healthy, live long, work hard, do exercise, that doesn't have a cost associated with it. That's just a willpower thing. It's a training, education, and willpower.
Well, I do think we, unfortunately, in Kentucky, we have set up our environment so that it's very hard to be healthy.
But here's the thing. Is it important to be healthy? And that's a hypothetical. It's a question. Do we as Eastern Kentucky people think it's important to be healthy? Because if things are important, we do them, right?
Well, and if you feel that things are hopeless, and I think there is a sense of hopelessness.
Yeah, I agree. I think it ties into that.
Then what's the point of being healthy in a hopeless time? It's just nothing good's going to happen anyway. Everybody's going to die anyway, and then you get that.
But high tech's not going to fix all that.
No, it's not. Not at all.
I think we are trying to agree. As much as you're not letting us, I'm trying to agree with you in a high tech way.
I'm puzzled because what is this agree thing you speak of? You and I have never agreed on anything. I don't understand.
But
you're
I do think
now.
I think
I'm suspicious. I don't know what your motives are.
Well, you don't use a gamma knife, which is pretty high tech, to get somebody to go out and run a mile or do 600 sit-ups.
Yeah. Now, things could happen. I mean, there's going to be a certain percent of the population that's going to have bad health outcomes anyway. Unfortunately, though, if you don't have healthy behaviors, that percentage rises. And the bad outcomes happen at an earlier age, which unfortunately is going to take money out of the system.
I will say, though, that, you know, high tech doesn't always stay high tech, if you think about that for a second. So high tech is different in everybody's era. I think people that walk around with an insulin pump on their waist, it's pretty high tech when it came out. It's pretty normal right now. Boy, it sure changes their life, doesn't it?
It does. I think the fact that you can record your heart rhythm, one of the things that bothers me is that we used to strap Holter monitors on a person and monitor their heart for 24 hours and charge them several hundred dollars to interpret it. And I think you can use machine algorithms to interpret that. And I think,
Tony, we figured out in medicine how to charge people to sleep.
True. We do. One of the most expensive things you can do in medicine is get a sleep study. Sleep. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of sensors there. But, again, you think we could probably do a lot of this sensing, a lot of those things, using proprietary stuff without having people to come into the lab.
And the cool thing is provided they don't kick us off the air, in 10 years we'll tell you what the new high tech is and what the old high tech was.
Well, you may remember Barb Phillips, who was on our show talking about
with a name
sleep
like
medicine.
That, how could I forget her?
Yeah, and she, that's true. She, thank you. Will you stop distracting me? I'm trying to make a point here, and this is really getting annoying.
I agree with you, Tony.
Okay. There is way too much joy and love in this this studio. We're going to have to call security. But Barb,
I'm
Phillips
not leaving.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Joy and love, and also Shelley. Now we're trying to
what
get
were you
the point.
Gonna say?
The point is, Barb Phillips came on the show and said she was trying to get home sleep studies compensated by insurance companies. Part of the problem was insurance companies would not allow you to do a sleep study in the home, even though you could get reliable diagnosis of sleep apnea from that. So, you know, part of it is the technology, but part of it is simply us recognizing that and lowering our prices.
I suspect it's because we haven't shown them that by doing that study at home at a lower cost will save them money down the road. Once we show them that lower cost option will save them money, they'll get on board. It's telemedicine was the same way.
Right.
You know?
But the problem with the sleep studies is nobody wants to do the lower cost. Sure, we'll go home, but we're still going to charge the high cost.
But at some point, the high tech, high cost turns into medium tech, medium cost, and low tech, low cost.
All right. Let me move on. We've talked.
You have two minutes.
I know. And I've got one other thing that I want to just hint at before we close this show down.
You never hint.
This is this was at the Society of Hospital Medicine. They had their meeting in Las Vegas, which is where Rick always goes for his meetings, and I'm suspicious
not
about
always.
That. That'll be a different show. This is a report on Medscape, May 5th, 2017. And they mentioned a piece of legislation that passed 92-8. That is, it had strong bipartisan support. It's called the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act. Our problem was Medicare was based on some flawed economic assumptions. We kept doing more and more stuff, kept getting paid more and more money, collectively, doctors and healthcare providers, from Medicare, and it was supposed to be budget neutral. So there was something called the sustainable growth rate that was supposed to dock people's salaries across the board a certain percentage, but we kept campaigning to have it postponed. Finally, Congress acted 92-8 and did the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act. And this is the start of moving us away from what we call fee-for-service. Right now, as a physician, I get paid to remove your toe. The more toes I remove, the more I get paid. That's not the way you want to pay your doctor. You want to pay your doctor to save your toe. The problem is we have difficulty counting how many toes we've saved. It's easy to count how many you removed. They're in a pile. You can count them.
Formaldehyde smell.
Yeah. But when you talk about the ones you saved, it's much more difficult. So they're trying.
Couldn't you take the one you lost and add whatever the number is that gets them to 10?
Sure, you saved 9, but they may have been saved anyway. Maybe I didn't do anything to save them. I don't deserve to get paid for saving the other 9 when I remove the 1. So MACRA is a way of looking at quality of healthcare delivery rather than volume, and it's a first step in maybe getting to an affordable healthcare system. We need to take the first step in getting off the air.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a prescription radio show used in adults to treat irritable bowel syndrome with constipation and chronic idiopathic constipation.
Idiopathic means the cause of the constipation is unknown. It's not known if Health Matters is safe and effective in children less than 18 years of age.
Do not allow children who are less than 6 years of age to listen to Health Matters. It may harm them.
Absolutely.
Health Matters may cause severe diarrhea, and your child could get severe dehydration.
Do not listen to Health Matters if a doctor has told you that you have a bowel blockage or intestinal obstruction.
Before you listen to Health Matters, tell your doctor about your medical conditions, including if you are pregnant or plan to become pregnant, because they want to know that. If you,
no one ever told me that.
It is not known if our show will harm your unborn baby.
Other common side effects of Health Matters include gas, stomach area pain, swelling, or feeling of fullness or pressure in your abdomen. Call your doctor or go to the nearest hospital emergency room right away if you develop unusual or severe stomach area pain, especially if you have bright red bloody stools or black stools that look like tar.
Depending on insurance coverage, most eligible patients or listeners may pay as little as $30 per show for up to 12 Health Matters refills. Check with your radio station for your copay discount. Your out-of-pocket expense may vary. This offer is not valid for cash-paying patients.
Never for cash payers. Whatever you do,
listeners.
Do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week. Make a healthy change in your life. And tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.